House, please come to order. Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the roll.
The roll shows 31 members present.
Representative Halford, are there any members excused?
Mr. Speaker, I don't have any list of members excused in the call today.
Will the members please rise for the invocation by Pastor Milton S. Hunt, Resurrection Lutheran Church.
Let us pray. Most gracious Creator, we approach your heavenly majesty and present our simple requests. Since you are the light of the minds that know you, because you are the life of the souls that love you, and as you are the strength of the wills that serve you, help us to better know you that we may truly love you. Assist us to love you that we may fully serve you and discover the secret of serving that which is perfect freedom. We ask these things through Jesus Christ, who came as the light of the world, the life for men everywhere, and the power for victorious living. Amen.
Representative Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Hearing no objection, the prayer will be spread on the journal. The clerk, please certify the journal for the 57th legislative day.
Mr. Speaker, I have one correction to the journal for the 57th legislative day. Page 718, House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 77 rules, after passage of the effective date clause, insert. Representative Moss gave notice of reconsideration of his vote on House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 77 rules relating to commercial transactions. With this correction, I certify as to the journal for the 57th day.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal as certified and corrected for the 57th legislative day be approved.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, as you note, Representative Brown is ill today, and so I'll be sitting in his seat, so I would ask that the clerk reflect that whenever I vote on any occasion, it'll show up on Mr. Brown's light, but that I be shown as voting in his station. Mr. Speaker, as long as I'm on my feet, could I ask unanimous consent that I be shown as a co-sponsor on House Bill 881, which is a bill establishing an eagle preserve in the Haines area.
Hearing no objection, Representative Miller will be shown as a co-sponsor on House Bill 881. Representative Halford.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. With regard to excuses, Representative Malone is excused today and Representative Freeman is excused until plain time today.
I note Representative Freeman's presence in the chambers. This brings us to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction? Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to introduce Mike Walty from the Anchors Child Abuse Board in Gallery A.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, I would like to introduce two young ladies that are staff members, Roxanne Turner and Sandra Nakanak. I'm very proud of both of them.
Representative Metcalf, under introduction, guests. It's my intention to, unless there are some announcements to be made, to ask the House to stand at ease while the Senate members are seated in the chambers, and then after the joint session, I'll ask the House to stand at ease for last-minute announcements and anything else that needs to be brought before the body. Representative Halford?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, John Cowdery from South Anchorage.
Unless there are other guests for introduction, then will the House please stand at ease so that the senators may be seated. House, please come to order. In accord with the uniform rules, the President of the Senate presides over joint session. So at this time, I'll turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, Senator Katula.
Senator Rohde, we move that all members... Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that all members of the Senate be shown as present and the roll call be waived. Jackson, so ordered. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. President, I move that all members of the House be shown as present and the roll call be waived.
Jackson, so ordered. At this time, we'll send Mr. Phillips, Randy Phillips, and Senator Fahrenkamp to escort our distinguished guests, and we'll stand at ease waiting their arrival. Could you please come back to order? We have had a legendary relationship with the Yukon and Northwest Territories. Even today, when there's sometimes a south border skirmish of some sort, Alaska and those particular provinces always feel close. The members communicate. I think this is a historic first to have the Joint Assembly represented here. And I'd like to introduce the speaker to make the introductions and continue the introductions of the members.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great, with a great deal of honor at this historic occasion that I have the pleasure of introducing, first on my right, members of the Yukon Legislative Assembly, Mr. Tony Pinnicott, the Minority Leader of the New Democratic Party. The Honorable Dan Lang, who is the Majority Leader for the Progressive Conservative Tories. Alice McGuire, Member of the Legislative Assembly, representing the Liberal Party. And sitting next to the Chief Clerk, Patrick Michael, who is the Clerk of the Yukon Legislative Assembly. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I want to introduce Bob Fleming from Yukon Legislative Assembly.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. President, sitting on my left, it's with a great deal of honor that I introduce members of the Legislative Assembly of the Northwest Territories, Mr. Peter Frazier, Deputy Speaker. Mr. Bruce McLaughlin, Caucus Chairman. The Honorable Kane Tologanak, the Minister of Government Services. The first member that will be addressing the joint session will be Mr. Tony Pinnicott, member of the Legislative Assembly, who, as I have earlier said, is the Minority Leader of the New Democratic Party. Mr. Pinnicott.
President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Alaska State Legislature, and Alaskan friends, thank you for your kind welcome and the privilege you have afforded us of speaking to you in joint session. I know I speak for all our delegates in expressing our appreciation for the hospitality which has been shown us. Hopefully, I can repay you in some small measure by keeping my remarks relatively short and painless. Like the resident of the cabin situated next door to a mansion, we Canadians are keenly sensitive to differences with our neighbors. While the United States has had dramatic and colorful history, it is sometimes observed that Canada has a lot more geography than history. You have had both a revolution and a civil war. There are many reasons why we have yet to experience events of that scale, but one may be that most of the time in Canada, it is simply too cold. The United States is renowned for the value it places on individual freedom. But the Canadian attitude, one American writer has observed, is one of deference to authority. Your government is in the Republican tradition with a clear separation of powers. Our parliamentary form of government makes the executive directly accountable to the legislature. And this system requires party discipline of a kind which is, we understand, almost unknown in your country. We think of American democracy as being characterized by a two-party system, though it is fascinating to learn that this pattern has not been so closely followed in Alaska. Canada, on the other hand, has an enduring three-party system, which system, I should point out, has a tendency to produce minority governments and quite frequent elections. And believe me when I tell you that many a Canadian politician envies the regularity and predictability of the American schedule of elections. The three political parties represented in the Canadian House of Commons are also present in the Yukon legislature. And our delegation here today includes spokesmen for these three philosophies. Our number includes conservatives, a liberal, and a social democrat. The world regards the United States as the great example of the free enterprise model. Comparatively, Canada has a large public sector. In fact, some of the largest companies in the transportation, communications, and energy fields are government-owned. Public enterprise in Canada has a long tradition. Canadian unity required the linking of our regions by rail and radio. And we found, with our small population, that only the nation could command the capital necessary to complete these links. To demonstrate that the reasons for this often misunderstood phenomenon are practical rather than philosophical, it is noteworthy that most of the large public corporations in Canada were in fact created by conservative governments. We Canadians, you see, are masters of the art of making a virtue of necessity. However, the reason for our visit is not our differences, but our similarities. As has been said, Yukon and Alaska have always been good neighbors. There are many common themes in our respective histories. Frankly, we often seem to have much more in common with each other than either of us has with the southern parts of our own countries. Indeed, most members of our delegation have friends or relatives in Alaska. We socialize together on occasions like our sourdough rendezvous, through events like the Arctic Winter Games. Our athletes frequently participate in friendly competition. Our leaders have met regularly in recent years. And this week, we have come here to learn from the most politically mature of our northern neighbors. Your state has already experienced a major pipeline, a huge Aboriginal land claim settlement, and the profound constitutional change from territorial status. These events are still in our future. We want to be prepared for all these eventualities, and we are here in part to solicit your neighborly advice. Our communities are joined by one of nature's wonders, the Yukon River, and by the Alaska Highway, a monument to man's ingenuity. We have a common interest in respect of the Yukon River, particularly when discussing the fishery and hydroelectric development. Yukon shares with Alaska a market in the developing tourism and visitor industries. We share responsibilities for certain species of wildlife, even though some of these animals show a complete disregard for international boundaries and federal, state, and territorial government rules and regulations. Our respective economies are heavily reliant on resource extracting industries. And we assure that the debate on resource issues occupies as much of your time as it does ours. Significantly, I should point out to you that Yukon has not yet obtained control over non-renewable resources, which is the one power that distinguishes a province from a territory in the Canadian constitutional framework. We also appreciate your enthusiasm for discussion of railway expansion in our region. This too should be the subject of some useful exchanges between us this week. You may be also interested to hear that almost a generation ago, we managed to move our territorial capital. We come to Juneau not as experts, but as ordinary citizens who happen to be chosen as legislators by our constituencies. We are practical politicians who come to visit our closest neighbors for some frank talk about problems of mutual concern. We certainly expect to enjoy this visit to your capital. We sincerely thank you for this invitation. And we definitely hope you will accord us the opportunity to repay your hospitality at an early date. Before I conclude, let me say a word or two more to introduce our delegation, because it is, I believe, very representative of the whole Yukon community. First, my opposition colleague, Mrs. Alice McGuire, the Liberal member for Kewaunee, a constituency that covers the Alaska Highway from the outskirts of Whitehorse to Beaver Creek. Mrs. McGuire operates a small business in Haines Junction and is known in our legislature as an effective advocate of Native rights. Mr. Bob Fleming, who until his retirement from business operated a highway lodge in Teslin, and he was first elected to the legislature in 1974. His constituency is one of the largest in the area and includes the settlements of Ross River, Upper Liard, as well as Teslin. Mr. Fleming recently joined the Conservative caucus after sitting as an independent for 7 years. Dan Lang, who you'll be hearing from shortly, was also elected to the legislature in 1974, and he represents, as I do, a City of Whitehorse constituency. And in spite of his apparent youth, I believe he is now the longest-serving cabinet minister in Yukon. Currently, as you've heard, he holds tourism, economic development, and renewable resources portfolios in the executive. We were fascinated to observe your Senate in session this morning. We look forward to seeing much more of your work in committee in the House. We have already been struck by a number of singular differences in the way we operate. I should tell you that the parliamentary system operates on the assumption that it is impossible to act and think at the same time. Dan Lang will forgive me if I describe him as the leading actor in our delegation and myself in my role as the opposition leader as the leading thinker. On behalf of our delegation, I want to thank you for your time and attention, and please do accept our invitation for a visit to Yukon very, very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Our next speaker will be the Honorable Dan Lang, Majority Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the legislature, and fellow Northerners. Allow me to repeat Mr. Pennicutt's words of thanks for you having extended this invitation to us to visit Juneau. It is indeed an honor to be here. Mr. Pennicutt's introduction of me as the leading actor in our delegation, I find very flattering. It's not often that the leader of the opposition is so kind with his words, and Tony, I trust this is an indication of what's going to take place in the future. Thank you. Seriously, though, I especially am most happy to be here today. I, perhaps more than some of the other delegates, have a special feeling for the state of Alaska. This morning, Senator Rohde introduced me to the Senate and indicated that I had the good fortune of attending the University of Alaska for a number of years. But I went one step further. I brought home an Alaskan with me, a very close friend, close associate, and in fact, her uncle served in the House of Representatives in the early 60s. Furthermore, I and a great many other Yukoners spend some of our most enjoyable days fishing and touring in the Haines, Skagway, Juneau area. Mr. Pennicutt has remarked upon the similarities that exist between Yukon and Alaska. And there is no doubt we have a great deal in common, and it is the goal of our government, the Yukon government, to see that our common bonds continue to be strong and in new areas where it is mutually advantageous, expanded. Your kind invitation and the hospitality you have shown us indicates to us that Alaskans share that goal. Hopefully, our visit here this week will result in the further identification of common objectives that can be pursued through strengthened dialogue between our two governments. We have much to learn from each other and can, I believe, accomplish a great deal for our respective regions through such dialogue. In an effort to begin that dialogue, I would like to speak briefly about a number of issues of concern to both Yukon and Alaska. Hopefully, we will find the time over the next few days to pursue these topics in more detail and can establish some long-term working arrangements. The first of these issues concern the management of the porcupine caribou herd. As you are aware, this herd has historic importance for natives in both Yukon and Alaska. The native people in Old Crow particularly depend heavily upon this herd for food. Alaskan and Yukon biologists have been cooperating for several years in attempts to gain as much information as possible about the movements and the habitats and habits of these caribou. In fact, an intergovernmental caribou meeting will be held this week in Fairbanks to exchange data. Still, we in Yukon are concerned about the long-term survival of this important resource and hope that cooperative management measures fair to both Yukon and the state of Alaska can be developed in the near future. As Minister responsible for renewable resources, I can assure you that our government remains ready, willing to continue and expand our discussions on this subject. Another major concern Yukoners have is the question of the management of the Pacific salmon, which I'm sure you share. As many of you are aware, I appeared on behalf of the government of Yukon before the Pierce Commission on Pacific Fisheries Policy in January to present the concerns of Yukon subsistence, sports, and commercial fishermen. The major point made was that while Yukon streams produce a large number of Pacific salmon harvested by, in large part, Alaskans as well as British Columbia fishermen, fewer and fewer fish are being made available to Yukoners. Highly restrictive regulations are being imposed on all Yukon users of this resource, and fears are mounting that within a few short years, the ability of Yukoners to harvest any salmon will be gone. We certainly agree that Yukon salmon must be available to Alaska commercial fishermen. However, we would request through the international negotiations presently underway that cooperative programs be developed that would lead to a more equitable sharing of this precious resource. Yukon cannot continue to afford the costs of protection of critical salmon habitat without receiving a greater measure of consideration in the allocation of this precious resource. By developing an understanding between Yukon and Alaska, we can exert significant influence on the international salmon negotiations that will hopefully result in greater benefits in the long term to each of our regions. Both of the above issues are of concern to me as Minister responsible for renewable resources. Allow me now to speak to my tourism and economic development portfolio about a number of issues I believe requiring our joint attention. The Alaska Highway Natural Gas Pipeline is of great significance to both Yukon and Alaska. The construction of the pipeline through Yukon has the potential to become the catalyst that will ensure the economic viability of our region. The jobs and associated business development that will occur should result in a renewed period of economic prosperity. Furthermore, the pipeline will give us access to an alternate and considerably less expensive energy source. It is interesting to note that without access to Alaska natural gas, our per capita energy costs could rise to over $9,000 per dwelling by 1990. As you can see, construction of this project is extremely important to us. Over the past few years, indeed, since Alyeska, we have consulted with Alaskan officials on a number of pipeline issues. We have learned a great deal from your pipeline experiences, and I sincerely hope that such cooperation will continue in the future, and that both of our governments can, in whatever ways appropriate, do our part to encourage and ensure the implementation of this massive project. A related issue in which both of our governments have considerable interest is the Shakwak project. I'm sure many members in this legislature, when they drive home to the interior, also share that interest. We've been most pleased with the work done to date on the Haines Road and the Alaska Highway, and are most anxious that the remainder of the work be completed. In this connection, we are extremely pleased with the efforts of the state of Alaska in lobbying for completion of the project. We understand, in fact, that the issue of additional financing for the project has recently been resurrected in Washington by your congressional delegation, and that Senator Murkowski has received some support for the funding proposal from the Secretary of Transportation. Our government supports your endeavors in this regard and offers whatever assistance you may require. Completion of the project has important implications for the tourism industries of both our jurisdictions and is essential to the efficient construction of the Alaska Highway Pipeline. Because of our joint dependence upon the Northern Transportation System, it is important that we cooperate wherever we can to ensure the integrity and efficient use of that system. For example, Yukon depends heavily on the Port of Skagway and the White Pass Railway for the shipment of much of our mineral production. The port and railway also figure prominently in the logistics plans for the Alaska Highway Pipeline. In efforts to ensure the survival of this important transport link, Yukon made a significant financial contribution last year to the railway. This action helps not only Yukon, but protects and preserves the interests of Skagway and the Alaskans employed there. In connection with tourism, allow me to say how pleased I am with our joint tourism promotion efforts. As most visitors generally visit both Alaska and Yukon, a cooperative approach to tourism marketing is the only sensible course to follow. As you know, our two jurisdictions have joined together to jointly market our tourism industries, and I believe it's the only two regions in North America that have done this and in our estimation, it works. We in Yukon, however, were most disturbed by the recent announcements by Wien Air that it is abandoning its Yukon-Alaska service. The lack of scheduled air service between our two regions certainly will have an impact upon ours and yours tourism industry, and does little to support the kind of intergovernmental cooperation we are discussing here this week. Currently, Transnorth Air, a local Whitehorse carrier, is applying to take over the route abandoned by Wien. Our government is supporting this application and hopes that the Alaska government, in the interest of maintaining and strengthening our close and harmonious ties, will offer its support as well. Finally, allow me to comment briefly on our cultural ties by passing on my best wishes to all the participants in the upcoming Arctic Winter Games. The young people who will be competing in Fairbanks are the future leaders of the North. These games and the friendships they encourage can only lead to stronger ties between our two northern regions. I must also take the opportunity of this forum to pass along to Larry Cowboy Smith the encouragement, best wishes of all Yukoners for this year's Iditarod race. Last year, Larry showed Alaskans how to run a dog race. This year, he's showing you he can make a mistake and still be in the running. And we know he will again do Yukon proud. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to address you here today. I sincerely hope that you will accept Mr. Pennicott's invitation to visit Yukon in the very near future, and so that we can attempt to repay you for your warm hospitality, and so that we can continue the dialogue we have begun here this week. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Our next speaker will be Mr. Peter Frazier, who is the Deputy Speaker of the Legislative Assembly of the Northwest Territories.
Deputy Speaker of the Legislative Assembly of the Northwest Territories, I would like to thank you on behalf of our Speaker and the rest of our members for the opportunity to visit your state and address this joint session of the Alaska State Legislature. I'm only sorry that we don't have a full delegation, but we just completed our budget session on Friday, and I'm sure you can understand that most members were anxious to return home to their families. That was a five-week session, so we do have something in common. During my address, I would like to explain to you how our Northwest Territory legislators operate, and my colleague, Mr. Kane Tulaganik, who will talk about the administration and government services in the Northwest Territories. Even though we don't share common border with you, like the Yukon does, we are very interested as northern legislators to see how your state legislature operates. We, like the Yukon, are just beginning to deal with many of the issues you have already concerned yourselves with, like petroleum development, Aboriginal right claims, and we also hope to gain some knowledge in these areas while we are here. Our Legislative Assembly is comprised of 22 MLAs representing the residents of the Northwest Territories in a consensus-style government, as there is no party politics in our Assembly, and our Speaker is chosen to play a non-partisan role in the traditional British way. As there are no parties at present, all the member caucuses, as one group include the Speaker, will sit as well as other committees. Our caucus meets primarily to schedule activities for the House and to arrange for other informal functions which take place outside of formal sessions. We have a standing committee on finance, legislation, rules and procedures, which review matters in their jurisdiction before they go to the House. We have a member services board chaired by the Speaker, which concerns itself with the administration of the Legislative Assembly and other services to members. There are also special committees which are struck from time to time to deal with specific tasks assigned by the Assembly. At the session we just completed, the Special Committee on Education submitted a report after 2 years of holding public hearings and many recommendations calling for a complete new administrative approach to education in the Northwest Territories. As the legislators from the Yukon are aware, we formed a special committee on Constitution of Canada, which was comprised of all 22 members of the Assembly. This committee called for a recess in our November session while the committee and Assembly staff traveled to Ottawa to make our concerns known regarding the federal legislation designed to produce a new Constitution for Canada. This unprecedented move was taken by the Assembly to protect the rights of Aboriginal people in the Northwest Territories and to prevent the provinces from extending their jurisdiction into the Northwest Territories. We were successful in maintaining Aboriginal rights in the Constitution and at least made federal parliamentarians aware of our concerns over the other issues. Our members receive an annual salary to cover their time spent meeting during formal sessions of the Assembly. We meet for a six-week main budget session, as well as two other sessions of 2 to 3 weeks. The main session is always held in the capital of Yellowknife, but the shorter sessions are often held in smaller communities at time and place determined by caucus. Members also receive a daily indemnity of expenses for attending to committee work. And in this way, the more active members are rewarded for the extra time they spend on government business. This works very well for us, as some members are willing to be full-time MLAs while others prefer to attend to their own business, which in some cases means traditional living off the land. I should also mention that some members can only speak well in their native language, and as a consequence, our House provides simultaneously translation in English and Inuktitut for our Inuit members. Members are also allowed to claim daily indemnities for doing constituency work. This is necessary because the NWT is 1.3 million square miles, one-third the land mass of Canada, and some members have very large areas to represent. My own constituency is comprised of 8 communities spread over an area of 6,000 square miles with a population of 2,000. All of my constituency travel has to be done by chartered aircraft, as there are no roads linking my communities. Several of our members have constituency travel allowance which exceed $15,000 annually. We were at a sort of a warm-up party last night when one of the members mentioned that if they were to divide Alaska in two, that Texas would be the third largest state. I thought it was kind of, I don't know the states too much. I know that Texas is supposed to be a pretty big place, but just to give you a clear picture of the vast size under our jurisdiction, there are only 46,000 people spread over an area of 1.3 million miles, which works out to 28 square miles per resident compared to 2 square miles per resident in Alaska. Now, if we were to take the Texas state, New Mexico, California, and Alaska combined, and you'd have the size of the Northwest Territories approximately. I see here, just before I go on, that the every time we get to one of these things, the members say, well, Fraser, you got to tell them the joke. I thought it would be appropriate. I was going to tell you a Texas joke, but you probably heard Texas jokes, so I'll tell you. I'd like to tell you a joke of the two Indians that got lost. The Indians are not supposed to get lost. But anyway, these two Indians were lost, and they wondered what they were going to do. So the one guy says, well, what are we going to do? He says, we're lost. So he said, well, when a white man gets lost, he shoots. And somebody comes along and finds him. So he said, well, that's a good idea. So he says, you shoot a couple of times. So he shot a couple of times. He waited a couple of hours, nobody showed up. So he said, well, that's funny. He says, the white man can't be wrong all the time. He said, they got to be right sometimes. He says, maybe shoot a couple more times. He said, they'll find us. So he shoots a couple more times, and still nothing happened. So they were getting dark, and they were wondering what they were going to do. And finally, one guy says, well, try again, he said. So he said, well, I can't shoot anymore. I got no more arrows. However, just before I go on, I brought some books here, which is the Explorer Guide 82, which gives you all of the settlements in the Northwest Territories, and this is our annual report for 1981 for the Northwest Territories. I only brought a few. They're pretty heavy, but I assure you that if there isn't enough to go around, that if you leave for your name and address, give me your name and address, I'll make sure that you get one mailed back to you. I don't know how you're going to distribute them. I didn't realize there was this many people, and my clerk said, well, take a few, and if they want more, there's always more available. But it's just an information item. Our members are elected by general election, held every 4 years, which is a term presently set by the federal legislation. The federal government also appoints a commissioner who is the chief executive officer of the government of the Northwest Territories and has the power to approve or disapprove of our legislation. It is the objective of Northerners to achieve autonomy for ourselves within Canada, just as you attain statehood within your federal system. We hope that our visits here will help us to learn about the ways you operate your government, and we hope that our presence here will help you to gain more knowledge about one of your northern neighbors. Even though we belong to different nations, we share some common problems and responsibilities, and it is our hope that someday we can return your hospitality and entertain some of you on our turf. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Our next speaker will be Mr. Bruce McLaughlin. Apparently, there's been a change in the program. Our next speaker will be the Honorable Kane Tologanak, who is the Minister of Government Services, who is here with the delegation from the Legislative Assembly of the Northwest Territories.
Speaker and members of the Alaska State Legislature. I just want to continue on what my honorable colleague from the Northwest Territories left off, just to describe what the administration, the government of the Northwest Territories, does in our jurisdiction of Northwest Territories. Now, just before he came up, the honorable minister from Yukon stood up here and Pete figured whether he should ask a joke or not, if we're standing or sitting. So I think I'm sitting as far as Pete is concerned. there's not only difficulty in governing a very large territory due to its size, but also the ethnic makeup of the people of the Northwest Territories. I'm a Inuit from the Arctic coast. If you go right around along the coast, you eventually get to my community. But our population roughly is made up of one-third Dene, which is a Dene name for Indian, and one-third Inuit, which I come from, and one-third what we call others being others extraction. We have to deliver services to traditional settlements of less than 50 people, as well as modern urban communities. These communities are not easily accessible by roads or by scheduled airlines. Some places don't even see an airplane or another group of people for long periods of time. We have some highways in the southern part of Northwest Territories, and once a year we deliver fuel and necessary items to last the whole winter by barge. Just to give you an idea about the makeup of the executive of Northwest Territories, as my colleague has mentioned, the commissioner is appointed by the federal government in Ottawa, who acts as our chief executive officer, which is similar, I believe, to the Alaska situation before you achieve statehood. The executive of our government is made up of the commissioner, a deputy commissioner, who is also appointed, and seven ministers, whom I'm one of, chosen by the members of the legislature from amongst ourselves, which our caucus chairman conducts the secret ballot votes with our clerk of the assembly. Caucuses are in camera from the public. The members of the executive at the present moment represent territories. In fact, they come from both ends of the jurisdiction of the Northwest Territories. In order to help govern and administer and provide services to the Northwest Territories, we create what we call regional administrations. We have five regional administrations centers which serves all the residents in the Northwest Territories. And these regions differ in many ways, not only in race, in language, communications, transportations. And these five different regions deal with different provincial transportation centers, I should say. We deal with provincial matters in a different way. We deal with Ottawa in most directly as possible, when we can at least get in touch with them. The area, the western part of the Northwest Territories, the transportation center would be Edmonton. In other words, if you want to go south, you go through Edmonton. And if you want to go from the Keewatin area, you go through Winnipeg, and the people in the far, far east on the other side of the ocean, they go through Montreal. We, of course, have five government headquarters, as I mentioned, in addition to our headquarters, which is in the capital of Yellowknife. Unfortunately, I have to move to Yellowknife from my own constituency in order to serve the people as a government. Regional councils as well are formed by the local governing bodies. And these local governing bodies, we call regional councils, do make up the vast amounts of money for our budget, which we take to Ottawa in order to fight for the kind of funds we require to administer Northwest Territories. From time to time, two or three times a year, the regional councils meet. These are representatives from the communities and give advice and sometimes direction to how the government of the Northwest Territories should react. One of the most important things that I should mention that the Northwest Territories will be undertaking next month, which the members at the moment are scrambling back to their constituencies. Members of interest groups are traveling around the Northwest Territories. We are having a territorial-wide plebiscite to determine if the Northwest Territories should be divided into Eastern and Western Territories. There are many different sides to the plebiscite, however, and some of the sides do concern the people in the Eastern Arctic. The Eastern Arctic people have long been complaining that not enough services are being provided by the government of by the federal government and by the government of the Northwest Territories because of its vast distance in order to better serve the people in that area. So the vote initially was initiated by the people of the Eastern Arctic. And that question has been, well, argued, well thought about for many years by the people in the Eastern Arctic. And myself being one of those considered to be from the people of the Eastern Arctic and being of the Inuit origin, that I do support the division of the Northwest Territories, there are people who say that the division would not accomplish but to divide the territories. But we are saying that with more local government and with better representation in a government by the people is the direction we want to take. There are many issues in the Northwest Territories which we deal with. We have a number of different Native organizations who are well recognized by the federal government and our own government. The government of the Northwest Territories' credibility was not all that great with the Native organizations for many years. This Ninth Assembly, which me and my colleagues belong to at the moment, has to work hard right from the bottom to bring that credibility back to where the Native organizations and our Legislative Assembly are speaking with each other. And that credibility has gone beyond our wildest dreams. Mr. Fraser has mentioned that we chartered a plane from Yellowknife to Ottawa to lobby and to talk to our legislatures in Ottawa on the Canadian Constitution. We're able to do that because we're a consensus government. There are many arguments at the moment that party politics will eventually come to Northwest Territories. We don't disagree with that, but we feel the time is not yet come. We're dealing with many major developments that are forthcoming our direction, and these include the Arctic Pilot Project, which would see the tankers go up north to extract the necessary resources to keep our lands well fueled and warm so that we can live in. But the tanker route that the proponents are proposing is filled with much very delicate environment and a very delicate livelihood of our people, the vast majority of our people, which is game. And the preservation of those is very livelihood of the people in my area. And if that is damaged, even by one tanker, where would the Inuit exist today? And where would they go? There's another development which is very much concerned to the Dene, the Indian people, in the western part of the Northwest Territories, and that's the Norman Wells pipeline, which Mr. Fraser comes from, is Norman Wells. This pipeline has also an impact on the people in the area, on the people in the Northwest Territories in general. Because Northwest Territories is only a territory. The federal government reserves all the right to take all the, they don't share the revenue with the Northwest Territories. they don't share the kind of decisions that they make on our behalf. There may be some consultations, but those consultations eventually end up in a stockpile. The Constitution development in Northwest Territories is slowly coming to where all the people and all organizations are coming together. And one of those areas, as mentioned, was the Ottawa trip on the Canadian Constitution for the Native organizations from Northwest Territories, as well as our own Legislative Assembly, got together and came with a very strong belief that we, the people, should be looked after as well. And those echoes are being heard in the British Parliament. We know the passage will be quick and fast in Britain, and our Prime Minister Trudeau will have his constitution, then he can retire, and perhaps that would be the best for Canada. Thank you.
Members of the Yukon and Northwest Territories Legislative Assembly are having lunch with the governor in just a few minutes, but perhaps we might have time for a couple of quick questions, if there are any, before we conclude the joint session. At this time, I'll turn the chair back to the President of the Senate, Senator Kutula.
There are a couple of questions.
House stand at ease. Representative Hall. House will stand at ease until 2 o'clock this afternoon, unless there are any last-minute announcements. Representative Fuller.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask all members to leave their limbo files on the desk so they can be updated today for tomorrow's session.
Thank you. House will stand at ease. We'll reconvene for the joint session at 2 o'clock.